Well, you started us off this month with talk of the war in Ukraine, but it's at this time of year when some people's thoughts turn to another war, and thankfully to thoughts of its ending. Joan Aubrey had an interesting time in the ATS during the Second World War, and it made her determined to mark the sacrifice of 26 servicewomen who lost their lives in a bomb attack at Great Yarmouth. Here's Dorothy with Joan's story.
The memories are still clear in the mind of 101-year-old Joan Aubrey as she recalls her days 80 years ago in the Auxiliary Territorial Service, ATS, during the Second World War. The anxiety of her parents when she told them their only daughter wanted to answer the call to serve, the trepidation of not knowing what was ahead, and long journeys to new postings in Belgium and Germany. The experiences helped to shape her life and gave her the impetus to be an integral part of a campaign to honour the memory of 26 other ATS members whose lives were taken in an air attack in Norfolk in 1943. Joan, who lives in Norwich and is a mother of three, tells her story in her own words. "I was born Joan Stittle in 1920 in the small market town of Soham in Cambridgeshire, where I spent the first 21 years of my life. War was declared 6 days before my 21st birthday. The government was calling for girls over the age of 17 and a half to serve in the ATS, the women's branch of the Army, the Women's Auxiliary Air Force, WAAF, or the Women's Royal Naval Service, WRNS, to release men for fighting duties. I felt I had to help. Most girls did, I think. As my father lost two brothers in the First World War, my parents were somewhat apprehensive, but gave me their blessing. In October 1941, I volunteered for service in the ATS, had a medical examination, was declared A1, and waited. It was not until January the 10th, 1942, that my calling up papers arrived with instructions to report to Northampton Station, where I would be taken to Talavera Camp for 6 weeks' training. As I had no brothers or sisters, it was at first strange to share everything from meals to sleeping quarters with 29 other girls. We were issued with two sets of uniforms, underclothes and pyjamas, four pairs of thick khaki-coloured stockings, a pair of brown lace-up shoes, a personal blanket and ground sheet, and the inevitable gas mask to be taken with us wherever we went. After the initial 6 weeks of training in army rules and regulations, learning how to salute, to drill, to march in time to a band, lectures on how to keep healthy, what best to eat, hundreds of cabbages and carrots, apparently, I was somewhat relieved to be posted to Cambridge, where I would have my own small bedroom, as I was now a corporal. Firstly, I was a personal assistant to a brigade major in the Cambridge sub-area of Eastern Command, and then in the Army Kinema Service. Here, training films and one recreation film were taken out to lonely gun or searchlight sites around East Anglia. I spent 2 weeks at a warrant officers and non-commissioned officers course in Durham and a week's gas instruction at Winterbourne Gunner on Salisbury Plain. I then volunteered for overseas duties. I was sent to a holiday camp in Bristol, where we spent 3 weeks waiting for a ship to take us to who knows where. Very early one morning, we were dispatched in army lorries across the country to Tilbury Docks. We arrived in war-damaged Ostend early next morning, before being transported to Brussels. Here, I was billeted in the barracks and allocated to the Army's legal department as a shorthand typist, with an office in the centre of this lovely city. VE Day on May the 8th, 1945, was memorable. We heard Churchill's announcement of victory and were given the next day off work to continue the celebrations. I was sent to Germany to Bad Oeynhausen headquarters of the British Liberation Army and continued my work in the legal department. As some of the inhabitants were still hostile, we could not leave our compound unless accompanied by an armed soldier. At the end of the war, we were urged to go into little museums to see pictures of what had been happening in the concentration camps like Belsen, which the British had liberated, finding all those dreadful gas chambers. I remember writing home to my parents to say I couldn't have gone into one of the concentration camps, such as Auschwitz, because the pictures I'd seen had been so awful. Finally, in July 1946, I was demobilised and went back to being a civilian again. I got a job as a secretary to the chief chemist at Chivers in Histon. I got married to Kenneth Aubrey and came straight to Norwich, where we ran a sweet shop and library in Botolph Street until it had to be demolished for the building of Anglia Square. On May the 11th, 1943, 26 women were killed in Great Yarmouth when enemy fighter bombers made a direct hit on their seafront hostel, the greatest loss of life in one raid in any of the women's services. The women, aged between 19 and 31, died when the enemy raid reduced Sefton House to rubble. Among them was 19-year-old Lillian Grimmer from Cobham. She should have been on leave, but a friend had wanted to go home for her birthday and they agreed to swap leave. The attack came on a misty morning when the group of ATS women attached to the Royal Corps of Signals had just marched back to their hostel after a physical training session. Low-flying aircraft could be heard, but the sun and sea haze obscured them from view until the very last moment, and the 18 Focke Wulf 190 aircraft swept in, releasing their bombs along the north part of Yarmouth. Many decades later, Joan Aubrey, a member of the Norfolk branch of the Women's Royal Army Corps Association, was told about the awful air raid. Gorston man Valentine Grimble had been researching it after discovering several headstones of young women encased a cemetery bearing the same dates of death. As was the custom during the Second World War, no public information had been released about the raid at the time. The parents had all died by then, not knowing what had happened to their daughters, says Joan. It seems as if they had been lost, but no one knew anything about it. I wanted them to be remembered, so I raised funds by holding garden parties at my house. Other branches of the association contributed, and Marks and Spencer's and Sainsbury's too. Enough money was raised to pay for a fitting memorial plaque to be engraved with the names of all the women who had been killed. It was erected on the wall of the Palm Court Hotel, which was thought to be the site of Sefton House. Joan was proud to watch the plaque being unveiled by Lady Mary Soames, daughter of Sir Winston Churchill, on May the 11th, 1994, 51 years on from that fateful day. Services have been held at the plaque to continue the act of remembrance, but last year the memorial was removed after having been damaged. It has now been repaired, and on Sunday, May the 15th, there will be a service to place it at the Imperial Hotel, now considered to be closer to the spot where those women lost their lives.